The Antichrist and his henchmen enter the temple that's been refabricated. The Jews are offering up their animal sacrifices once again. The Antichrist is going to look at the high priest there in the temple with a sinister grin and say, "Get him out of here." The henchmen are going to take him away. They're going to usher in a throne and bring it into the Holy of Holies. And the Antichrist is going to sit down on it and say, "Worship me." And Jesus Christ in Matthew 24 calls it the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. The good news is we are still on the winning side. And the devil is winning battle after battle right now. But the ultimate war belongs to God. And so bottom line is, if you're saved, you're going to be gone. If you're not, you need to get ready for the coming abomination.
The Bible says that the gospel of Christ is the power of God unto salvation. Welcome to Pulpit Power, featuring Pastor Tony Skeving, senior pastor of Fargo Baptist Church in Fargo, North Dakota. Today's message was previously preached before a church audience. And now, here's Pastor Skeving.
Let's take our Bibles, please, at this time and turn to the Old Testament book of Daniel and the 9th chapter. And believe it or not, folks, I think, if I count right, this is the 50th sermon we've had here. We've studied this book verse by verse. And last time we saw that the wall would be built in troublous times. More about that in just a moment. But we're going to look at some verses here, two verses at the very end of Daniel chapter 9. That really sum up what I call the coming abomination. The coming abomination. In verse 26, the Bible says, "And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. And the end thereof shall be with a flood. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate." You say, "Pastor, that was a mouthful." And what in the world is it talking about? Well, more about that in just a moment. But we need to back up really to understand those two verses by going to verse 25 first. The angel Gabriel tells Daniel, "Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince should be 7 weeks and 62 weeks, and the streets shall be built again and the wall even in troublous times." Now last time, and it's been a while, so we're going to back up and review. Last time we talked about those troublous times and the fact that that wall did get built, but it was in troublous times. Can you relate to troublous times? I think life is a series of troublous times. I don't know about you, but since I've gotten saved, it's been a lot of trouble. And really, you dare not wince at it. You dare not lament it. As a Christian, expect it and accept it. I've been reading the book of Jeremiah recently, and this verse, Jeremiah 10:19, sticks out at me. The prophet himself is talking. He says, "Truly, this is a grief, and I must bear it." And that's really the Christian life. There may be griefs, but we have to bear them. And maybe even right now, I'm talking to somebody here, you're going through a troublous time. You say, "Why?" Well, I don't know why, but God has a reason. He wants us to bear it. Now, we find here in verse 25 again, it says, "The street shall be built again, and the wall, even in troublous times." Notice that word "shall." That wall is going to get built. It's going to get done, but it's going to be in troublous times. So let's not waste our time wringing our hands and wondering why. It's just a fact of life, these troublous times, especially for believers. You know, it's talking about during the days of Nehemiah when the Jews were trying to rebuild Jerusalem and they were getting harassed by Sanballat and Tobiah and others. And yet, remember this, they were in God's perfect will. They had gotten released from captivity. They were where they should be, doing what they should be. And you say, well, why do Christians try to do God's will have troublous times? I don't know, but I do know this. We'll know there, and as for now, we know that God's up to something. God's always up to something. And God is more interested in making us what we ought to be than the progress we want to see, the effective, efficient, you know, stuff that we want to have happen. A number of years ago, I think it's been about 10 or 11 years ago, I was going through something, and I called a preacher that's probably 12 years older than me. He's on our radio station, and really a great man of God. And I knew he had gone through something similar. And so I called him and I said, "Brother, here's the deal." And I laid it out for him. And I said, "Now, I happen to know you've gone through this. What can you tell me to help me with this?" And he just said a few words. And then he didn't say anything else. He said, "Brother, God did that for me." And I'm like, "Yeah?" He said, "God did that for me." And then he said, "Think about that for a while." You know what? I've had a long time to think about that. I understand after some meditation what he meant by that. Folks, there are some things we go through, troublous times, and you say, "Well, why?" God's trying to make us what we ought to be. God is doing that for you. You don't see it now, but you'll know it then. So how long did it take the Jews to rebuild the streets and the walls of Jerusalem? Well, we talked about that last time too. Do you remember? 49 years or 7 weeks of years. 49 years. In fact, there's some confusion why verse 25 gives us a period of 69 weeks. And then verse number 26 gives us a period of 62 weeks. And you look at that, and you say, "Well, what's the discrepancy all about here? I see a 7 week discrepancy here, or 49 years. Well, we talked about it, the fact that it took 49 years for them to rebuild the wall. And so verse 25 says, from the time the commandment is given to restore and to build Jerusalem until the time of Christ is going to be 69 weeks or 483 years. But it tells us that the streets are going to be built in troublous times. And if we do the math here, and by the way, there were no chapter divisions in the original, no verse divisions. It just ran into each other. It's telling us here that there's going to be a 49-year period of the Jews struggling to get that done. And then from that point on in verse 26, it's going to be 62 weeks. And so we find here there's no discrepancy, but they were going to go through some troublous times. And it was all foretold to happen. And so the wall did get finished. And guess what? It got finished right on schedule. God has a timetable. We don't always understand it, but God is always on schedule. And he said, this is how it's going to play out. So why do we go through troublous times? Well, I said in the last message, first of all, the road to serve God is never an easy road. And where do we get the idea? It will be. There's going to be battles. And if you signed on thinking, hey, it's going to be a cakewalk, you were disillusioned, because that's not the Christian life. I immediately had strife as soon as I got saved. Well, I say immediately, I kind of flew under the radar for a couple of months. I laid low. But when I finally, and God had to ring my bell, eat my lunch, to get me to do it. But finally, when I came forward and let it be known, I'm telling you, everything I anticipated happened. And so the road to serve God is never an easy road. And there are some folks, and they make professions of faith thinking, hey, this could be better. This is what I need. I've got a rough life. And the gospel they embrace is kind of a gospel. They're looking for a fix. And so they're a bit disillusioned when afterwards the wheels fall off. Where did we ever get the idea serving God was an easy road with no curves and no bends, and it doesn't get narrow and it doesn't go up and down? It's just the opposite. Fact being, when we get saved, we now have three new enemies. We have the devil working against us. We were working with him before. Now he's working against us. We have the world working against us. We have our own flesh working against us. And it's a continual battle. And you find that in the book of Nehemiah. It was an uphill climb. You find that with Daniel. You find that with the Apostle Paul. You really find that a lot in the Bible. You're going to have to battle for every inch. There's going to be troublous times, especially in the day and age in which we're living. And you know why? Because the devil knows his time is short. I mean, he can read the Bible as well as we can. We're studying the book of Daniel. We have the book of Revelation. I know this. He understands the Bible better than we do in many ways. And so he knows his time is short. And he is fighting for absolutely every single inch that he can. You know, back during the Korean War, and we have some Korean War vets in the church here. Back when the Korean War was winding down, they signed this armistice thing, and I think July 27th of 1953, they said the war is going to end, there's going to be a ceasefire, it's going to be peace, but for the last 24 hours, both sides, right there along the 38th parallel, were fighting intensely for every inch they could gain before the ceasefire. And it's really then that the fighting got the most intense. Folks, we're in the end times. The devil knows his time is short. And we're fighting for every inch. It's a real battle. I got a preacher friend who says, no guts, no glory. I was taught in Bible college not to say the word guts when I'm preaching. And so we were told to use the expression intestinal fortitude. Remember that, preacher? And so it's going to take some intestinal fortitude in these last days. The Bible refers to us as soldiers. You know, the people of God have always been opposed. In fact, we've always been mocked. You find Sanballat and Tobiah. They're mocking Nehemiah. And today we're going to get the same thing. But you know, Nehemiah didn't get sidetracked, folks. And we dare not get sidetracked either. The devil will tell us it can't be done. God says, greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. I've heard that a lot. It's not going to get done. But I don't believe that. God is able. And just know this, as it's getting done, it's going to get done in troublous times. And so first of all, the road to serve God has never been the easy road. Expect troublous times. Secondly, know this, and I mentioned it last time. Spiritual blessings are easier kept than regained. Oh, I wish we could just latch onto that principle. Spiritual blessings are easier kept than regained. These Jews had been warned over and over again back in the days of Jeremiah and others to straighten up, and they didn't. And they were told, you're going to go into Babylonian captivity, and they just blew it off. So the day came, and they lose 70 years there in Babylonian captivity. Finally, they're released. They go back. They roll up their sleeves. They go to work. But the troublous times hit, and they lose another 49 years. They're struggling getting their traction again because spiritual blessings are easier kept than regained. And before you backslide, remember that. It's better that you just keep plodding along. I know we're living in discouraging days. And I know you say, you know, what's the use in the day and age in which we're working? But I've seen so many Christian people and they drop out of the race. And either they never recover or when they go to recover, they really struggle trying to get back on track. And the more time that elapses where they are backslidden, the harder it is to get back on track. It's not impossible, but it's not easy. You know, those Jews were living the dream in Jerusalem all that time, but they backslid, the hammer fell, Nebuchadnezzar came in, brought them into captivity, 70 years go by, and finally they're released, and they have the unenviable job of going back to Jerusalem. And it's a hard route because blessings, spiritual blessings are easier kept than regained. They lost those 49 years on top of that. It took them more years to get on track. And I'm telling you, it'd have been so much easier to just behave and keep that wall intact and those streets intact than having to start all over again, clearing off the rubble. And that had to be discouraging. We know it was discouraging. We read about it in Nehemiah 4:10. Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burden is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. What a place to have to start. And all because they didn't hang on to what they had. What happens is we wind up in a hole afterwards. So don't go there. Just remember, during those tough times, just keep plodding along. Stay on course. Don't compromise. Folks wonder why, after all these years, I won't budge as far as convictions go, as far as Bible truth go and doctrine goes. You know, there are a lot of things that once you lose them, they're either hard to regain or you don't regain them again. The devil will pull things away one inch at a time. And so don't compromise. Don't go there. You only have one life to live for God, and don't blow it. You know, Jesus addresses a church in the book of the Revelation, the church at Ephesus. And he said, I have somewhat against thee because you've left your first love. They were already slipping. Here it is, 90, 95 AD. They'd only been around a few decades, but they've lost their first love already. It is the church at Ephesus by the year 400, 430 AD that is credited, if you want to call it that, with introducing the worship of Mariolatry into a church. And you say, how did that happen? One inch at a time. Sliding is dangerous, folks. Guard it. After the Babylonian captivity, the Jews laid the foundation of the temple, and it was just a shadow of the original temple of Solomon. In fact, we read this in Ezra 3, but many of the priests and Levites and chief of the fathers who were ancient men that had seen the first house, when the foundation of this house was laid before their eyes, wept. You need to understand when a Jew, especially in Bible times, wept, it wasn't a silent sob over in a corner somewhere. It was a wailing. They were weeping and wailing because they had seen the original temple and they realized what they had lost. And now they knew what they'd have to settle for. And I know in their hearts they were thinking these young whippersnappers are rejoicing, but they should see what we lost. Oh, they should see what we lost. They realize we should have listened to Jeremiah way back yonder. For years he warned us, and we didn't listen. And we have a nation right now, folks, that's not listening. We've lost a lot of ground, and never forget this. Blessings are easier kept than regained. Please hang on to what you have. It's an uphill battle to have to get it back. So before you fall away or before you stay falling away, please consider you're only making it worse for yourself later. Well, there's a third reason we have to go through troublous times, and that is we get what we're willing to pay for. You know, if you want a closer walk with the Lord, it's not going to come by surfing the net all night, night after night. You can't ignore God and walk close to Him. It takes time to cultivate that relationship with Him, and it's time that's well worth it. Because we get what we're willing to pay for. So here's the Jews. They go back. They're going to rebuild. The streets, the walls are going to be rebuilt. But it's going to be in troublous times. They pay that price. They dig in. They roll up their sleeves. They keep their head down. They keep plodding along. And they pay the price. And they put the city back on its feet. And that's where it needed to be. Because years later, the Messiah is going to ride into town on a donkey. Ever thought about that? They have to get this street rebuilt. It's prophesied that the Messiah is coming, and he did. So they went to work. And I love this verse in Nehemiah 4:6. So built we the wall, and all the wall was joined together under the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. In the 21st century, do we have a mind to work? And by the way, young people, work is not a four-letter word. It's a good thing. Don't be afraid of work. Work is ordained of God, going way back to Genesis. And anything worthwhile is worth working for. And really, the story of Fargo Baptist Church has been one of being willing to pay the price and work. And I commend the people of this church. Your workers, and it takes a special people to pay that price. You know, there were a lot of Jews that did not go back to Jerusalem. They stayed in Babylon. I mean, the decree was given, you can go back. And many, if not most, stayed there in Babylon. You know why? Well, they had houses there. They had jobs there. They had friends there. And so they took the easy route. And most of them really didn't realize the ones who went back were making history, Bible history. Think about that. You know, if you study history, even the American Revolution, by the way, we think, you know, pretty much all of America was for their fight against Britain and independence. That's not true at all. It was a tiny minority, really, of folks who were willing to fight that fight and pay that price. And it was carried out by a few, by the minority, when really the majority were apathetic, and some even were opposed to fighting with Britain. You know, progress takes special people. It really does. Never forget that. And if you're part of the progress here, God bless you for that. Because the majority of Jews stayed in Babylon, and only, I call them the faithful 50,000. A remnant were willing to go back and to be the pioneers and endure the setbacks, and endure the debt that they endured, the harassment they endured, and they paid that price. Have you ever thought about the fact that most of you, including me, are descendants of some folks who dared to immigrate from Europe, and several generations here we sit? And have you ever wondered if you had lived at their time, be it in Norway or Ireland or France or Sweden, if you would have been one of those that would have immigrated to the U.S. at that time? And as people went west, you ever thought about this? Would you have gone out west? Go west, young man. Remember the cry? You know, I wasn't there at the time. I don't know if I would have. I think I would have. But really, there have always been those who have gone before us. They've paid a price. They've gone the extra mile. They've worked for the cause, and they've done what needed to be done. And there's always somebody that has to pay the price. And then others who, they come along later and they sit under the shade of trees they never planted because somebody else paid the price. Let's be the price payers, and let's get involved, and let's get our hands dirty, and let's make our hearts vulnerable. You know, Nehemiah did. He wept when he heard the news. He fasted and he took it personally. And he said, somebody needs to do something about this. And he did. So let's not be indifferent, all right? And just understand, if anything's going to get accomplished at this time in history for a child of God in a New Testament church, it's going to take place in troublous times. Let's be willing to accept that. Now, that brings us to the message. That was all review. No extra charge for that at all. But let's talk about this coming abomination. And in verse number 26, it says, and after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. And the end thereof shall be of the flood. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. So anyway, we're going now from that time period of the 49 years that they have struggled rebuilding the walls and the streets of Jerusalem. And we find now that there's going to be 62 weeks of year from that point until the Messiah, the prince, is going to make his entry into Jerusalem. And notice, be cut off. That means crucified. It adds in verse 26, but not for himself. He was sinless. He wasn't paying for his sins on that cross. He was paying for ours. So it's not for himself. Now, it switches gears, and it says, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Now, we're talking about the Antichrist and his forces, and the end thereof shall be with the flood. And then it adds, and under the end of the war, desolations are determined. Think about this. Until the end of time, desolations are determined. And we know this was written to God's people, the Jewish people. And so until the end, there's going to be this antagonism amongst people. And we know that's true because this world doesn't get along, because this world is full of depraved people. And every day is filled with turmoil, be it within families, be it within businesses, be it within churches, because they all have the same thing in common. People. Our own nation does not get along. If you notice how polarized we are even in our own nation here. Now, again, remember this prophecy is for the Jews. We find out in verse 25, 70 weeks are determined for thy people. And so Daniel was a Jew. And we find as we read on that for the Jewish people, desolations are determined. That means until Jesus Christ comes back again, it's going to be rough for the Jewish people. And it's been that way since this was written. But you know, the fact that it tells us until the end, there's desolation determined for the Jewish people, means that the Jewish people are going to be around when Christ comes back. You say, well, yeah, so? Well, there are a lot of people groups that aren't around. There are a lot of people groups that have gone out of existence since this was written. When's the last time you met an Amorite? When's the last time you ran into a Philistine or an Amalekite or a Midianite? You don't run into them anymore. They've gone out of existence since this was written. Oh, but the Jewish people, They're in the news every day. Why? Because God promised them perpetuity. And until the end, desolations are determined for them. They're going through it. And by the way, they've been harassed more than all those other people groups put together. Why aren't those other people groups around? Well, God promised to God, his people perpetuity. And so there's this desolation determined until the Antichrist, this prince, comes on the scene. And up until he comes, they can expect desolations. By the way, Israel has always been the brunt of the world's hostility. And it's hard to believe that they're only 1/5 of 1% of the world's population. 0.19%. Think about that. Why is it? I'll tell you why. There's a bullseye on them. The devil absolutely hates them. Of the 8 billion people of the world, here's this 0.19%, 1/5 of 1%, and they have all this hostility and anti-Semitism. You know, we talk about China. They make up 20% of the world. We talk about India. They make up 20% of the world. When's the last time you heard any anti-Indianism, if you want to call it that? You don't. But not a week goes by where there's not some anti-Semitism somewhere in the world. Why is Israel always in the crosshairs? Well, because they bug the devil. They witness of God. And so there's going to be desolations determined for them until the end. You know, you don't ever hear anything bad about Switzerland. You know, people put their money in Swiss banks because they're never in a war, right? Would they do that in a Jewish bank? I don't think so. There's something about the Jew that really bugs the devil. Now, I'm not saying Israel's faultless. I mean, they're depraved like all of us, sinners like us. But nobody has been able to stop the hostility toward Israel. I heard an NBA player this last week. Maybe you heard that too. He said some anti-Semitic remark out of the blue, and you go, what's with this? Folks, remember this. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. The real battle is demonic, and the Jews bear witness of God, and that gnaws at the devil. He absolutely hates that. And so here's Israel, and until the end, desolations are determined, wars are determined for them, and they've been through a number of wars. They're always looking over their shoulder. And there's been a number of peace accords that were broken before the ink was dry. There's no ifs or ands or buts about it. Desolations are determined for Israel until Christ comes back. And I'm not a warmonger. In fact, just the opposite. But I do believe the Bible. And from the time Israel cried out, his blood be on us. And by the way, that didn't help their cause much. But they have been slaughtered by the millions over the last 2,000 years. In fact, over the last 78, 80 years, they've been slaughtered by the millions. And it's a clear fulfillment of this passage and prophecy. But sadly, the worst is yet to come. Antichrist is going to make Hitler look like a choir boy. And so there's going to be that 70th week, the final 7 years of human history, and the spotlight is once again going to be on Israel. And it's going to be a bloodbath. Do you know that 2/3 of them, according to the Bible, are going to be annihilated? We read this in Zechariah 13:8. It says, "And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein." It goes on. "And I will bring the third part through the fire, and they shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Lord is my God." This is talking about during the tribulation period. 2/3 of the Jews are going to be wiped out. It's going to be Hitler all over again, and it's going to be awful, if you will. But we find a third come through the fire, a third survive, and a third get saved. If you want to call it in wholesale salvation, the nation is born again in a day. And Christ talked about it in Matthew 24. He said, "But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved." Have you ever had somebody try and use this to show you that you can lose your salvation unless you endure to the end? This is not talking about eternal security. In context, it's talking about the end times. In context, it's talking about Israel, and those who survive the tribulation period and the bloodbath
are not part of those two-thirds that are wiped out. Those that endure to the end shall see them, that one that they have pierced, and they shall wail because of him and realize he was the Messiah, and they shall be saved. But until that day comes, desolations are determined for Israel. In Jeremiah 30, it's talking about the tribulation. Verse 7 says, "Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it." And we've seen that in those other verses. Those that survive to the end shall be saved. Now, back in verse number 26 here, it mentions this expression, "unto the end will be war," and so on and so forth. It's going to be like that until Christ comes back again, even worldwide. There's always a war being fought someplace in the world. Most people don't realize this, but even back in the mid-80s, there were 45 nations at war somewhere during that time. Of course, African nations were feuding, and you got Libya, you got Iraq and Iran. You even had Britain and Argentina fighting at that time. A lot of people forget about that. You know, if you've ever looked at a list of wars the U.S. has been in since colonial times, you'd be shocked. And they say that there have been 350 wars fought since World War II. World War I was supposed to be the war that ended all wars. It sure didn't. World War II came along, and 350 wars since that time. And you say, what do you make of that? Well, just what the Bible says. Until the end, desolations are determined. And peace seems hopeless. And you say, well, why? Because there's war in the human heart. There's war in the human heart. God foretold this. In fact, over in Romans 8 and verse 22, Paul said, "For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain until now." From the Garden of Eden up until now, the whole world groaneth and travaileth in pain. You know that any peace movement has a connection to last day prophecy. There's going to be this push for peace in the last days. And the solution will be a one world government. I mean, think about this. I mean, and this is gaining momentum all the time. And the thought here is, if you homogenized all the nations, there are nearly 200, and you got them into one nation, they wouldn't fight against each other, right? Because we're all on the same team. There'd be no more wars. But there's a problem with that, a current problem with that. It's an obvious one. You can't have a one world government with a superpower. You following me? That just ruins everything. Everybody has to be on the same level. So certain nations need to come up, certain nations need to go down and level that playing field. And only then can we have peace. So the humanists say. 1 Thessalonians is an epistle of last day prophecy. And notice what it says in 1 Thessalonians 5. "For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape." So don't buy into all that peace talk, peace and safety. It's really a sign of the times. I'm not a warmonger. Again, I hate the whole thought of war, but I'm just trying to make the point that this thing is not going to end well. Until the end, desolations are determined, until Jesus Christ comes back to rule and reign. You know, one of the reasons for the millennial kingdom, I think, will be to show man that only God can bring peace. I mean, man's made a mess of it, and even Christ, he's going to have to rule with a rod of iron. We read that in the Bible. But finally, somebody's going to come who's going to rule in righteousness instead of this worldly philosophy and humanism. The King of Kings is going to have a perfect blend of justice and mercy. And the Bible says all nations are going to flow into Jerusalem and get that leadership from the King of Kings. And finally, we're going to have world peace, because we're going to be run by God's law, by God, not man's ever-changing foolishness. You know, morally, we are tanking in this nation right now and in this world right now. But we find out that when Christ comes back, then those desolations determined are finally going to end. Now, in verse 27, talking about the Antichrist, it goes on, more abomination stuff. It says, "And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. Know that the many there is talking about Israel. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Now, we're getting an inside glimpse here of something that's going to take place during the tribulation period. He's going to confirm a covenant with the Jews for 1 week. We know that's 7 years. And we find that they're going to sacrifice again because it says he's going to cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And so apparently the animal sacrifices are going to resume again. And by the way, there's an incredible movement in Israel right now to resume the animal sacrifices. If you keep up on the news at all, you know that to be true. And so anyway, we find out here that Israel is going to start up the animal sacrifice again. By the way, this is one of the passages that has to come to pass. And for that reason, I know that Israel had to regain Palestine again, like it did back in 1948. You know, we take that for granted. Many of us weren't born then. Some of you were. But that's huge, that Israel would get their land back after 1,900 years in May of 1948 is huge. I mean, it sat there for 1,900 years and the sand covered it over and the Arabs were squatting and it was just desolate. And somebody described it as a giant kitty litter box after 1,900 years. There was nothing there. It's been, I think, 74 years since then. If you go there now, the desert has bloomed like the Bible foretold. The Jews have fought off those enemies through a number of wars here. And now their focus is to resume the animal sacrifices. There's big talk over there about this. The furniture has been made. I don't know this to be true for sure, but they say the temple is already fabricated. It's in modular form. It just needs to be bolted together and it's ready. And so the animal sacrifices are ready to start. I think it'll take place after the rapture. But the Antichrist at that time will come on the scene. Remember, he is a Jew. We'll find that out later. And he's going to allow the Jews to resume their animal sacrifices. But at mid-trib, halfway through the 7 years, he's going to suddenly interrupt it. And that's what verse 27 is talking about. In the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And then it goes on and it says, for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate. And it talks about some other things there. You say, what's this overspreading of abominations? Well, the word abomination speaks of something that is loathsome. It is disgusting in God's eyes. He abhors it. And if you read that word abomination somewhere in the Bible, and it's found 142 times, you're reading about something that God really detests. And I hate to put it this way, if God has a pet peeve, and please understand what I'm saying by that, it's idolatry. It's idolatry. And so you find throughout the history of Israel, they went into idolatry over and over and over again. And that word abomination denotes with it idolatry. It's found a couple other places in Daniel. I got to hurry here, but turn to chapter 11 if you would. And in verse number 31, it's talking about the same time period, tribulation. An arm shall stand on his part. He shall pollute the sanctuary of strength and shall take away the daily sacrifices and shall place the abomination that maketh desolate. Talking about the same event. The Antichrist interrupting the animal sacrifices during the middle of the tribulation period and setting himself up as God. Look in chapter 12. Verse 11 says, and from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days, roughly 3.5 years. So at mid-trib, picture it this way. The Antichrist and his henchmen enter the temple that's been refabricated. The Jews are offering up their animal sacrifices once again. The Antichrist is going to look at the high priest there in the temple with a sinister grin and say, get him out of here. The henchmen are going to take him away. They're going to usher in a throne and bring it into the Holy of Holies. And the Antichrist is going to sit down on it and say, worship me. And Jesus Christ in Matthew 24, calls it the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. And he says, woe unto those that are alive at that time. He says, let them that are in Judea flee to the mountains. He said, if you have something inside your house, don't even bother going back. If you're with a little child at that time, woe unto you. It's going to be hard to travel, and pray that your flight be not in the winter or on the Sabbath. That's how we know it's for the Jewish people. And he says, for then should be great tribulation as not since the beginning of the world nor to this time. And it's going to be an awful time. It's called the abomination of desolation. The Antichrist is going to pretend he's on the side of the Jews for a while, and then he's going to turn on them. The devil is saving his worst for last. I call it the grand finale, if you want to call it that. And he's going to come down with great wrath because he knows that he has but a short time. Right now, the Holy Spirit is restraining this evil. But when we get lifted up and the Holy Spirit with us, we find out it's going to be an awful time for Israel. Really, the way of the world right now, there's no way out. The way is up. And the good news is we are still on the winning side. And the devil is winning battle after battle right now, but the ultimate war belongs to God. Christ told us, let not your heart be troubled. And so bottom line is, if you're saved, you're going to be gone. If you're not, you need to get ready for the coming abomination.
You've been listening to Pastor Tony Skeving of the Fargo Baptist Church in Fargo, North Dakota. If you would like a CD of today's message, you can obtain one by sending a gift of $2 to Fargo Baptist Church, 3303 23rd Avenue South, Fargo, North Dakota, 58103. That address again, Fargo Baptist Church, 3303 23rd Avenue South, Fargo, North Dakota, 58103. We hope you'll join Pastor Skeving next time right here on Pulpit Power. Pulpit Power is a production of Heaven 88.7.